It's really the what I believe is the core of cultural competence, which is the ability to let go of what you think and be able to listen what another thinks, and to try to be curious about what are the challenges they face.
Hi, this is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, and you're listening to Into the Fold. The Hogg Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Earlier this year, the Hogg Foundation launched a new grant initiative that we are calling Well-Being in Rural Communities. Its focus is 5 rural counties in Texas: Bastrop, Brooks, Nacogdoches, Morris, and Victoria. And its goal is to support collaborative learning, planning, and action to transform mental health and well-being in those communities. This is an ambitious goal. For it to succeed, we have to advance in our own understanding of how to build bridges with rural communities and what it means for a funder based in an urban area to have a long-term relationship with rural communities that goes beyond the usual funder-grantee relationship. Our guest, Dennis Mohad, is a former member of the Hogg Foundation's National Advisory Council. He has served as a member of the National Rural Health Advisory Committee and led many national efforts relating to rural mental health, including his role as the chief consultant to the President's New Freedom Commission on Mental Health. Dennis, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Ike. Good to be here.
So we've already said quite a bit about this new grant initiative and its focus on rural communities. As a funder, how can we expect to be changed by this initiative if we're going about our job in the right way?
Well, I think that as a funder, you're oftentimes focused on organizational level change and organizational level collaborations.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first thing that you're probably going to change around is a much more of a person-to-person kind of relationship with the initiative, in that rural people oftentimes operate in a much more person-to-person kind of a relationship structure. And so, for example, when I ran a community mental health center in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, people were not coming to meet with the executive director of Menominee County Community Mental Health Center. They were coming to meet Dennis. And so I think that having sort of operated more in urban settings, that'll be a big change to really be focused on individuals rather than the job that they do or the organization that they sit in.
So, and that almost seems to imply that each person who we send into these communities, not that they wouldn't be doing this anyway, may have to do some of their own work on themselves, just in making sure that they're always, putting, their best self forward for these communities, to have the most positive possible sense of who the Hogg Foundation even is, or what our persona is, I would think.
I think that it's important to, whenever you're engaging with other people, is to approach it with humbleness, and also to approach it with a sense of openness and curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
That it's really the what I believe is the core of cultural competence, which is the ability to let go of what you think and be able to listen what another thinks, and to try to be curious about what are the challenges they face, what are the ways that they believe that they can affect change, rather than coming to the table thinking about what you're going to do. You have to really come to the table ready to listen to what your partners want to do. And I think that most people at the Hogg Foundation that I've encountered already work with that mentality. I think that it's really the notion of putting the person first and trying to meet them where they are rather than trying to expect them to come to where you are.
Okay, so is there a sense from your experience that collaboration works any differently in rural versus more urban areas?
Well, I mean, I don't think that it works differently. I think that, as I said earlier, it's less about organizational collaboration that you might see in an urban setting and more about a collaboration between people. And it's much more of an individual by individual effort rather than an organization by organization effort. I think if you looked at it in around sort of a team structure, it's teams are groups of individuals, and effective teams work best when the skills of each team member is optimized, and you look at it as that collection of teams. Then if you looked at an organization like the NCAA, for example, that governs college sports, that's organizational, and it's partnership is between, the various universities and the various divisions. It's not about the individuals. It's far different.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what we're talking about when you go to rural, is that you're not going to be working with social services, or you're not going to be working, with the Catholic Church. You're going to be working with, Father Joe, and you're going to be working with Molly, who works for social services. It's going to be different. It's going to be agreements between those individuals that really then govern how their organization moves forward. In a lot of cases, in urban settings, you're hammering out deals between this entity and that entity, and who's sitting in the seat means very little other than whether or not they want to partner with you. If you make an agreement with social services in Harris County, it's with that organization, and it's much more formalized. And here, I think in a rural setting, while the process is the same, it's just that the need to develop the relationships, the need to develop the trust, is really at an individual, personal level.
So I think that you have already alluded to at least some of what this next question pertains to, but the cultural factors that are germane to rural communities that can either hinder, complicate, or we hope strengthen collaborative efforts. Do you have anything more to add on that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that, when it's a personalized agreement, when it's attached to a person rather than an organization, even though they're representing an organization, there's much more endurance to that agreement because, you've put your personal stake in it, and you have real skin in the game because it's your reputation. It's not your agency's reputation that you're really putting on the line. And so I think that really strengthens it. I think the other thing with a rural community is that we always struggle to make sure that we have the right people at the table. And in a rural setting, you can ask the people that you bring to the table, that you bring to the conversation, who else do we need to bring? And ask them to invite those people that are feeling left out, and help have those local people who are committed to their local community bring the others that you need to have as a part of the dialogue, a part of the partnership, in. And again, it's more of an informal, it's a more of a human-to-human interaction, rather than sending a letter out to the CEO of multiple organizations, inviting them to come over on Wednesday afternoon to meet. I think from a cultural standpoint, I don't care whether it's urban, I don't care whether it's rural, it doesn't matter whether it's going into a meeting here in Austin or going into a meeting in Dublin, Texas. It's still a matter of the understanding where you are. And to do that, you really have to listen. and be open to understanding. And I think that it's a struggle oftentimes to transcend your own culture and the your own perspectives on things, and really try to understand what that local culture is, and also to understand that there's not one culture. And that's true anywhere you go. I mean, it's not something that's just applicable to rural. There isn't one rural, just like there isn't one urban. And so you have to, I think one of the things that's going to be important for HOG is to understand that while there will be collective learning from each of the five rural sites that you've chosen, all five of those places are different, and they're a different, each one of them are a different part of rural Texas, and will have their own culture, but they'll also have microcultures within that culture. And so I think to be open to understanding that and curious about it, because the culture doesn't evolve accidentally.
Yeah.
And so to have that sense of curiosity as you engage with these communities, to really appreciate where they are, how they got there, and where they want to go.
I am curious about a number of things related to this new initiative. In fact, that's one of the reasons why, you know, I'm excited about it, just because it might help toward answering, you know, some of the things related to how it is that we talk about the impact that we're having. One of those being whether there are nuances to how people in rural communities define or talk about common concepts such as health, wellness, or even mental health. I mean, even within our world, it's not always apparent to me that everyone is in fact talking about the same things when they use those words. I mean, are there any nuances as far as rural that we should understand or at least be curious about?
Well, I mean, I think that I think back to one of my favorite movies is The Right Stuff, about the early space program.
Right.
And there's a great conversation in that where a pilot has died and the wives are sitting around and they're talking about how dangerous their husbands' careers are. And the one character says to another, "What does Gus Grissom, what's he say about it?" And his spouse says, "Well, he doesn't say anything about it. You know, he just maintains an even keel." And so I think that the short answer and sort of the quippy answer to this is they don't talk about this. And I don't know that is a lot different than urban settings. I think that in our country, we don't routinely talk about health, except in the most broadest terms. And we certainly don't talk about mental health because of the stigma associated with that. And so I think that I don't really believe that rural people have more stigma than urban people. I think that there's plenty of stigma to go around about these issues. And so I think that what's harder, again, in a rural community than an urban community is this, what I look at is the lack of anonymity. And so, you know, you can talk about issues, you know, if you have a meeting about something like this here in Austin, and you bring a bunch of people together to a meeting room to discuss mental health issues in Austin, there's sort of a safety in anonymity. You can talk about some of the, a parent can get up and talk about the challenges that their child is having with a mental illness. And, you know, unless there's a neighbor or two in the room, there's no one else in that room that knows who the heck they are. And so there's a certain safety in being able to open up about something that's being, that's impacting you. And that does not exist in many rural communities. So, for example, if you really felt that the community mental health center, for example, was not treating you with respect because of your race. You know, the person that runs that mental health center is probably sitting in the room with you as you're talking about that. And you're probably going to see him in the grocery store later. And you might see her at church on Sunday. And so, I mean, that lack of anonymity makes it really hard to open up about difficult subjects because, you know, you can't, once you open your mouth and start talking about it, there's no putting it back in and everybody knows. And it's why I think that, you know, one time early in my career, I did an effort where we closed down our satellite clinics and we moved our mental health staff and from our satellites in with primary care physicians. I mean, I'd like to say that I was, you know, just, you know, really brilliant and ahead of the curve on integrating mental health and primary care. But really, I was looking for a way to spread the cost and to develop some additional professional peer support for my staff working in remote places. But lo and behold, I find out that people felt much more, the consumers who were coming to access care at those primary care clinics, they felt a lot better about going there for care than coming to a building that I actually rented a block away. But it had a sign on it that said that it was the community mental health satellite. And so everybody in town knew that they were parked in front of that.
Yeah.
And so it was just a lot easier for them to come to the local doctor's office only a block away and sit in a waiting room and get called back and nobody knows why they're there. I think probably another example also from that same experience is we used to have on our prescription pads the name of our center right across the top. It said Menominee County Community Mental Health Center in big old bold letters. And finally, I mean, I was meeting with a group of consumers and asking them about things that we could change. And that was the first thing they brought up because they said when they went to the local grocery store that also had the pharmacy to hand in their prescription and other people were standing there, everybody saw that. And why did we need to have that? And I thought about it. There was no reason that we needed to have that on that prescription pad. Of course, now we don't take prescription paper prescriptions to the pharmacy, so it doesn't really matter. But I think that's an example of that anonymity issue that I really hadn't considered. And I think that that's something that there's going to be a lot of learning around is to how do you provide people with a safe space to talk?
Right. As a foundation, we're saying a lot these days about issues of power and equity, even injustice. And as a communications professional, I'm sensitive to the risks of brandishing terms like those, among others, that might provoke a knee-jerk response from certain audiences. What do we know or what have you learned about how to discuss, for example, racism in these kinds of communities in a way that leads to engagement rather than resistance or defensiveness?
Well, I think that, first of all, you can't use terms like that because folks aren't going to feel comfortable about it.
Yeah.
And especially things about, like, empowerment. You know, for example, if you went into a community and talked about how can we increase your feelings of empowerment, most communities, and I don't know that that's specifically an urban or a rural thing, but most folks would go, well, who are you to give me anything? And
or to even suggest that I'm not already empowered.
Yeah, you know? And so I think that part of it is, again, creating a safe space and having the net cast wide enough to bring in an array of people and create a space that is safe for people to go there themselves to begin to talk about those things. But, you know, it's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy, right? You can't start there. People are not going to talk about race.
Yeah.
And they're not going to talk about inequity unless they feel a level of trust and safety that they can walk out on that plank and not fall in the water.
Yeah.
And so I think the foundation has to help local communities create that space and build those relationships. It's not something that's going to happen quick. I mean, as a matter of fact, if you want to fail in this, you roll into a community and start with the hard conversations. You'll free up some money for the foundation because they won't want to work with you anymore. And so you have to take the time, be sort of slow and plodding, and help create that safe space, and then build the trust that enables people to talk about things that are difficult to talk about.
So that about does it for this episode. If you want to learn more about what we're doing to support well-being in rural communities, and also our ongoing efforts to understand precisely what that means, you know, per the conversation that we just had, check out the link on the Hogg Foundation homepage. You will be able to learn more about the grantees, as well as the collaborative approaches that each of them is going to be taking, hopefully with just the right kind of assistance from us. As well as that, episodes 55 and 58 of the podcast also talk about collaboratives, which is highly relevant to this conversation about rural communities. You can find those two episodes through our website on the Hogg blog. Just, you know, do a search and, you know, you should be able to find your way to them pretty easily. Dennis Mohat, thank you so much for just walking us through what really are, you know, the most salient things we'll need to keep in mind as we go into these communities and, you know, hope to try to impact them in just the right way. So we're thankful for that as well.
Well, I'm appreciative of the opportunity, Ike, and I think it says a lot about the Hogg Foundation that you're headed in this direction, because there's certainly a lot of work that needs done to support rural communities being healthy and promotion of wellness within them.
Thanks so much.